Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have here back on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, on a Tuesday, she is here, and we give you the chance to call in and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Trees, shrubs, flowers, grass, stuff you eat, stuff that's just there to be pretty, any and all of that. Houseplants, pretty much. And the idea is if you have a problem, call in and tell us about it, and she'll see if she can help you out. It may be still at this point you're thinking about planting something new. Certainly there are a lot of things that can be planted in the fall. And you know, any and all of that is certainly welcome. All you need to do is to call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the number for local folks here. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you've got questions, give us a call. Good to have you here.
Good morning. Good morning.
I was thinking, you know, this year, one of the things about this year is that we've gotten plenty of rain. Mm-hmm. And around my yard, most everything seemed to be okay with it, although I certainly have some plants that, at least to me, because they look sort of sickly and yellow, I'm thinking, well, okay. The first thing I think of is you've just gotten too much moisture. And I don't suppose there's much of anything you can do about that, is there?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing is because we get that moisture early, and it certainly depends on the plant. Someone will tolerate it much better and depends on your soil. So there's lots of depends on kind of things. But I think probably the biggest thing is that when they do get too wet, what we see is root rot problems. Hmm. And then when they get root rot, then when we do get, because they have a reduced root system, and then we do get hot, dry weather, normally they might be perfectly fine with that. But because of the hot, dry weather and the reduced root system, then they suffer where they normally wouldn't. So I think that's what people might notice is the fact that because of maybe that reduced root system that you know, unless, you know, if we have an extended drought period, you may want to go ahead and water things you might not normally water simply because, you know, they suffered earlier in the season. Yeah. So, but probably the biggest thing is making sure they really do need water, because just because things wilt, they will wilt if they have root rot problems, but yet the soil is still moist. So don't assume just because a plant's wilting that it necessarily needs to be watered. It could be just reduced root system. There's plenty of moisture there. It just doesn't have the roots to take it up.
Yeah, so. Okay. Well, other than that, it seems like actually a lot of things in my yard are perfectly happy.
For
some things
August.
Have bloomed. And in fact, I have a clematis, and it's one of the old varieties. I think it's a Jack Manny, somebody, you know, mm-hmm. one of the purple ones. And I don't think ever it has bloomed, had as many flowers as this year. It was just spectacular.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of stuff that's perfectly happy, and I'm not exactly sure what about this year did it, but certainly we got plenty of moisture.
I think the milder weather in a lot of respects, even though we, you know, obviously had a hot period there, but, you know, it's cooled off nicely. This is like a perfect temperature for us and for plants, too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we got some callers here to talk with. We'll start out with someone in Clark County on the toll-free line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
I need to know when I can cut down my peonies.
Well, really what you need to do, really with all the perennials, really the best thing to do is to let them go yellow naturally. Just let them die down naturally. So as soon as we start getting into those cooler season, usually they start to yellow and they dry up naturally. Now, if it has a ton of disease, which I've noticed some do this year with the peonies, you know, you may want to trim down early. But just to think about, you know, that as long as they have leaves on there, then they're able to manufacture their own food, and then they can have food reserves for next year, and then they'll be better for next year. So I know it's real tempting just to cut them down early, especially if they're not looking all that good. I know, especially if they're not looking all that good. So you really have to kind of think, well, try and wait as long as you can, as long as you'll tolerate them.
Yeah. No, they're not diseased at all. They're just kind of in my way.
They're in the way, I know. It's tough to mow around. I know. It's really kind of tough to mow around them. You might actually think September is a good time to actually move them. I don't know if you've ever thought about actually moving them into a flower bed or some place where you,
no,
they might do better for you.
Kind of out in the, they're next to the road, actually.
Oh, okay.
Next to the road. We live in the country.
Yeah, yeah. So if there is a different place to put them, this would be a good time to do it, because September is the only time we recommend moving peonies. So.
Okay. And when do you plant new blackberries?
Yeah, normally we do that in the spring, like in April or so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably true for most of our fruit crops and stuff is usually
okay.
April.
Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Thank you. And we'll continue talking next with someone here in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. I have two questions. The first one, I have a hibiscus, tropical type, and the leaves are rolling. It's nice and green, it's continuing to bloom. It started on one branch, and I've noticed the second. I've also noticed some very small brown insects on one of the blooms. Do I have thrips?
I don't know what you say. I would wonder about aphids, because aphids will certainly make the leaves roll.
I didn't see any, and I certainly looked for them, and there's no honeydew.
Okay. You don't necessarily, is this outside?
Yes.
You don't necessarily notice the honeydew as much outside as you do inside, I've noticed. So I would really check for aphids, because I noticed mine the other day had some aphids on the bud itself. And they'll certainly distort the leaves. So you might unfurl that leaf a little bit and see if you don't have some aphids under there. And aphids can be all kinds of colors from, you know, green to brown to black to you name it. So I'd really wonder about that. So you might just unfurl the leaf. I can't think of any, you know, usually, you know, they'll wilt, but they know don't normally do the rolling thing if they're just dry or too wet or whatever. So, yeah, I would really wonder about aphids.
Insecticidal soap, then.
Yeah, insecticidal soap's great. Actually, aphids are one of those things that you can, even just a heavy stream of water, you know, from your hose, you know, knocks them down enough that you can usually get them off. So it usually doesn't really require a whole lot of effort to get rid of them. So that's the good news, I guess.
Okay. The other is, what can you tell me about a plant named Hypericum. Hypericum?
Hypericum. It's St. John's wort. You might know by the common name, St. John's wort.
Yeah.
So is this there's several different kinds. Most of them are shrub-like things.
This is a shrub.
Right.
Maybe 16 inches high. Recommended as a low...
like a ground,
or I'm trying. To
like a ground covers kind of
ground
thing,
ground cover or a hedge.
Oh, okay, okay. There's different ones, so you kind of have to look because there's some newer ones that have come out in the last few years that kind of have this reddish foliage to it. So there's a few St. John's wort out there, a little bit different, but usually they're really a very nice shrub. Probably the thing that I've noticed with them, probably the most, they like a little bit more acidic soil than we have. So sometimes people notice a little iron chlorosis; they'll turn a little yellow on you, but not bad like we might think of with azaleas or some of the other really acid-loving plants. So sometimes that's an issue. They're really nice plants. We really haven't talked about them too much on the show, and I tend to sort of forget about them. I don't know why, but it is a nice shrub. I wouldn't hesitate to get it. They like a little bit moist soil, probably don't like to dry out terribly much, so if it's really hot, dry area, I'm not sure they'd be a good choice for that, but really nice shrubs. They don't get terribly big, usually 3 to 4 feet on probably on the maximum on some of them, but even shorter on some of the other ones.
This apparently is a short one.
Yeah.
Apparently has yellow foliage.
Oh, and it might very well be. Usually they have a yellow flower. And then the foliage, usually, as I said, there's a newer one that has kind of a reddish foliage to it. You know, the big thing now in horticulture, of course, is yellow foliaged plants. So it wouldn't surprise me all if there's a yellow foliaged one by far.
I think Wayside Garden has it.
Oh, okay, sure.
Brigadoon.
Oh, okay. They always come up with great names, don't they? Brigadoon.
Yeah,
how can you say no to that? But no, I wouldn't hesitate to get it. You might just try a few of them before you actually do a hedge or something to see if they do well in that particular area. But no, I think that's a good choice.
I thought I might get two or three. I'd like to hide some potted plants growing out. I'd like to hide the pot.
Oh, sure.
And that might do it then.
Sure, I think you'd be happy with them. They tend to have a nice fall color, so they kind of do a few things that, you know, kind of through the seasons, even when they're not in bloom, and they actually look pretty nice too. So you know, they'd be well worth it.
Well, thank you, Sandy.
Thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and is with us every month, always on a Tuesday, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape, lawn and garden care. And if you have a question, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So summer or autumn actually is a good time. I don't know how many people think about it, but actually is a good time for planting. If you want to plant shrubs. You want to plant perennials. There are a number of things. And a lot of garden centers, actually, this is a good time because this stuff, they put it on sale. So that actually is a good time to think about planting certain kinds of things.
Yeah, I think for probably the one thing I've noticed with perennials, at least in my thinking on perennials, your herbaceous perennial kinds of things, I think you're better off if you can do it in September or so, late August, early September, kind of through that time period. I think when you start getting into October, November, I think there's some concerns that they don't get established well. And, unless you really get a good deal on them, and I'm not sure I'd be going that late. On woody stuff, shrubs, trees and stuff, I wouldn't hesitate to go ahead and plant them through October, maybe even into November without. And I've certainly planted them around Thanksgiving time and haven't had any problem. But herbaceous stuff, I'd probably do a little bit earlier than that.
Okay. Let's talk with somebody else. Charleston, line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I have a problem with trying to get grass to grow in bare spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried, I went to a large farm supply store chain, and, you buy all these big bags of seed, and I even tried that stuff they advertise on TV. It looks like insulation that's blue.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that grass, will even grow on concrete blocks.
But not in your yard, huh?
No, but I think it's a joke. It doesn't grow at all. It's like it gets established and it just dies down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you have to wear those, golf shoes to walk around and make holes in the ground?
It's fun for the neighbors to watch. I don't know beyond that. I don't know if you need to wear those golf shoe things. I guess one thing, is this full sun or are you in a shady spot? Or
full sun and shade.
Full sun and shade? So you have two different things going on? So two different areas and they seem to be doing the same thing?
Pretty much, yes. It doesn't matter where. It's just that I can't get it to grow. It's basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have some shady areas. I mean, it's not shade all the time. I mean, part of the day will have a little shade and others have sun.
Okay. So I guess a couple things. Then when it does germinate, it comes up and then it dies. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it'll germinate some and then it'll then eventually die off.
Okay. And then you're pretty confident that you've watered it, properly after it comes up?
Oh, yeah, I water it crazy every day.
Okay. And you're not watering it too much?
No.
Okay. Okay, because that's the big thing on those young seedlings, of course, is that making sure they get water properly. I think at this point, if you tried several different things, you can't seem to get anything to grow in those spots, you might try a soil test just to see what's going on. Maybe there's something else happening there that you're just not aware of.
What would be watering too much?
Pardon?
What would be watering too much? What would you find is too much water?
What would I consider too much water? The one thing with it, when they're seeds, when you're just waiting for the seeds to germinate, they need to be watered a lot, as in just a light sprinkling, because you're just trying to keep the top surface moist. So you're maybe
want to do it lightly, right?
Right. You just want to do it lightly. You're just trying to keep that top surface moist. And then once they germinate, then you start doing less frequently, but more thoroughly. So you give them a really good drench, but then maybe unless it's hot and dry, maybe you don't water every day, or maybe, you kind of have to, when the weather's like this, it's certainly much more moderate and, we can sort of get away with maybe not watering it every single day, depending on your soil. Hot and dry, you may be watering it maybe a couple times a day. So a lot of it depends on the weather and your soil. Do you have a lot of clay in the soil or anything like that
cause
problems? Nice black soil.
What if you had put burnt wood chips or something, if you use burnt ash from wood fires? Is that bad or good for it?
Well, it depends on how much. I think, a thin sprinkling of wood ash is not a problem, but the one thing with wood ash, it is alkaline, and over time it will make the soil more sweet or alkaline than probably grass will like. Uh-huh. They like a, pretty wide range of pH, but they could get to the point where it would be too alkaline for them. So depending on how much you put on and how thick it was. So that's what a soil test would reveal. It would tell you what the pH is. It would tell you what phosphorus, potassium. Certainly potassium and phosphorus are both a little bit in the wood ashes. So it would tell you what those kind of levels are as well. So I would think a soil test might give you, at least you can sort of count that out. Okay, pH is not the problem here. I've got something else going on. So, and then you're working up the soil well when you plant the seeds?
Well, what I also done was I sprinkled on a lot of grind up leaves and grass clippings and things like that on too.
But they have good seed to soil contact.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's just like planting lettuce seeds, if you think about it, just like planting lettuce seeds. You got to make sure that the seeds are down in the soil. They have a thin layer of soil on top, not a lot of mulch on top that would keep them from germinate. So I think maybe some of those kind of things.
When's it too late to plant grass?
Well, this is actually a good time. August through September is a fine time. Actually, it's usually better because usually the weather's better. We get better rains and you don't have the weed seed competition.
So
it's not too late.
So it's better than what it would be April, May?
Yes, actually it is.
Really? In September?
Yep.
Well, that's good to know.
So it's not too late. You can try it. If all else fails, you might want to try sod.
See if that works out
better for you.
I know that stuff that you see on TV that's really expensive, that looks like insulation. I don't think that stuff works. I think you're throwing your money away.
Yeah. Well,
I hadn't had
good
any luck with it.
Yeah, well, good luck. I know it's frustrating.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And if you have an established lawn, you're thinking about doing fertilization. Are we near the time when you would think about doing that?
Absolutely. And actually, what we say, if you're only going to fertilize once a year, the 1st of September is the time to do it. So Labor Day, absolutely the best time. If you're only going to fertilize once, that's the best time to do it. So think about that a little bit.
Right. So we'll go on here. The next person we'll talk to is someone in Salem, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I have a dogwood tree problem. I've had this tree planted for about 7 years. It's a very slow-growing dogwood. It's Kusa, and it's Summer Stars, and it seems very hard to get going. I've lost 3 before this one, but it did grow for 7 years, and now it's dropping some leaves. About half the leaves are on. The tips of the where it dropped are still green, and I'm wondering if, like the St. John's, I know they need acid, so I gave them gave the tree a small soaking of miricide. And just don't know what else to do. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah. So you've tried 3 trees in the same spot, and each one of them
not
seems
the
to die?
Spot.
Oh, not the same spot.
They're very rare and sort of expensive.
Yeah. They're beautiful trees. I mean, they really are quite lovely. The one thing about those guys, really, really with a lot of the dogwoods, is that they don't like to be too wet, but they like moist soil. So you have to kind of find that happy medium. Now, this spring, certainly there could have been areas that normally wouldn't have been too wet, but then were. So
it sits up in a well-drained high place, and it's in dappled shade. I have a black walnut that's about 20, 30 feet from it. I don't know that that would affect it. But if I do use a miricide, because I know they like acidic soil, how often would you do that?
Well, the fact that the tree's struggling a little bit, I'm not sure I'd push it too much.
That's what I thought. I put it on.
Yeah, you really don't, especially with fertilizer types of things. Now, you could use something like sulfur, which acidifies the soil but really doesn't have the nutrients in it.
Okay.
It doesn't have the nitrogen and stuff that normally would really push the tree along. Mm-hmm. So you really want it to sort of, you really obviously kind of baby a little bit. Do you have it mulched at all? Do you have like wood chips?
I haven't really mulched. I use compost and wood chips over that.
And then it just never has seemed to gotten to be established. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, for 7 years it was doing fine.
Oh, okay.
And,
gotcha.
You know, this spring seemed to be pretty ideal for plants. But And I have another one that is maybe 5 or 6 feet tall that's real lush. But
Yeah, I just wonder maybe about it getting maybe a little bit too wet. I don't know what your soil's like. Certainly if it's clay soil or something where it doesn't drain as well as you might think.
I amended it with a...
Right. Yeah, I think probably your best bet at this time is just to kind of do what you're doing now. I'd make sure it's not mulched too heavily. You don't want it next to the trunk at all. You always want to pull it away from the trunk. It sounds like you have fairly good sight for it, all those kinds of things. But I know it ends up being frustrating because you feel like you're doing, it's just like the gentleman with the seed in his lawn. You feel like you're doing everything right, and why isn't this working out? Unfortunately, plants can't talk to us, so I think the one thing I do is probably just what you're doing now. You may want to put some sulfur and try to acidify the soil just a little bit. And then you may just find it just kind of had a rough year. I don't know if it had spots on the leaves. Do you ever notice any spots on the leaves?
No,
or it might have had a fungal disease or anything?
No.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I can tell you from that point. Did you plant the tree or did somebody else plant the tree?
Or?
Okay, okay. Because the other thing we always worry about a little bit is planting them too deep. So that's the other concern we have, especially for long-term survival of trees. So
I had a Styrax obesia that the leader died. This was 2 years ago and during a really heavy drought. And then it came up with all these side branches. And I left those just should I cut some of them off and make a new leader, or just leave it in a shrub form? Are you familiar with those trees?
I don't know. Tell me again what they're called.
Styrax.
Styrax?
S-T-Y-R-A-X, Obesia.
Yeah, I never had any personal experience with those particular plants, to be honest with you. I've heard of them. I don't really know a whole lot about them, to be honest with you. But I think any time you have, like, you know, it used to be a central leader, now it's not. I think you, and a lot of plants, you know, we grow them shrub-like or we grow them tree-like. So there's different choices. So I think it'd be one of those things, kind of personal preference, to be honest with you, and whether you want to go with the central leader again.
All right. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Nice to listen to you.
Thanks for the call. Next person we'll talk with is someone in Mattoon and line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
The last couple of years, my onions and garlic crops, they've been rather small.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last year was that early or late freeze we had. But I can't figure out what's going on, although I have changed my pattern a little bit. I plant the onions close together and then pull onions in between early spring for table onions. But now the onions, like, about 3 years ago, I used to get pretty good size onions, and now they're like golf balls or smaller. And the garlic, the same way. The garlic I plant in late fall usually, and in the past I had pretty good crops, so I didn't know whether it might be the soil. I haven't had it tested, and I don't think I've ever had it tested, really. I just wonder if it might be the soil.
Well, I think that's one that, because you know those guys don't really have a whole lot of problems in the way of insect and diseases. So it's usually now. So you're planting the garlic in the fall. Now last year nobody had good garlic from what I could tell. It was a tough year because of that cold spring we had. And then this year has probably been a little bit wetter than what they would have liked. But you're pretty confident when you plant them that the cloves themselves are pretty good size when you plant them, because, the bigger the clove, the bigger the garlic you're going to end up with the next year.
Yeah, well, I plant two types, elephant garlic and then the regular, the hotter, smaller cloves.
Right. But then the size of the clove that you're planting, it's the same size you've always planted, or because those individual cloves that you plant them help determine how big the final garlic bulb is going to be the next year. So
well,
the bigger, the better.
The smaller ones were smaller cloves because last
of the
year,
before. Gotcha.
Crop.
Gotcha. So it's kind of perpetuating itself because of the size of the cloves, I think, is probably what's happening.
Well, in the same area, I have a couple of rows of green beans, and they're just doing great.
Yeah, so it sounds like that. The other thing with garlic, they really do like a high organic matter soil. I don't know if you add compost and do those kind of things.
Well, I put some 12-12-12 on them when I plant them.
Right. But as far as organic matter, as far as adding compost or anything like that to the soil?
No.
Yeah, you may want to think about, increasing organic matter, and I think I definitely, you may want to think there's some great garlic varieties out there. Oh, my gosh, there's so many different varieties out there, and you can order them, and certainly it wouldn't be too late to go to order them, and you may find that you want to try some other ones, because I have a feeling, because you got smaller cloves, you're planting those same ones, and so you're really kind, because of the size of the cloves, I think there's causing you some issues about the future crop. Now, if you have a good year, obviously, then the cloves are going to be bigger, and then you'll be okay for that year. So I have a feeling that's probably part of what's going on.
So it's probably in the soil then.
Well, in the soil in the sense that you need more compost organic matter. You may want to get a soil test just to see if there is something going on with the pH or whatever, but I'd almost bet. And they could also tell you the organic matter content. In a soil test, and it's always kind of good to periodically do a soil test, kind of see what's going on. But I think about that for sure.
Okay. One other question: is this about the right time to plant lettuce and spinach for fall?
Sure.
Or is it too late?
No, I think you can. Especially spinach. Spinach is an amazing thing, and we actually could plant it in the fall, and it sort of hangs around all winter long, and then actually sort of does its thing in the spring. So spinach is kind of amazing. I would just look for one of those, where it's a leafy type, one of the leafy type lettuces. We're not looking for a head or anything, but no, you could certainly still get lettuce and spinach and stuff. Sure. So go for it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our guest this morning, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on a Tuesday once a month. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we have several people who are lined up here ready to go. We get right back to it, and just I'll give the phone number if you'd like to call in, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free. 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Muhammad, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question has to do with peppers. My pepper plants apparently got some sort of a fungus or something where it crawled the leaves, and they are just now beginning to, the leaves are beginning to come out of it, and I have new growth with no pepper set. Does anybody else in the area have that kind of thing? My neighbor has the same problem. Has that been a problem this year?
So the leaves crumpled? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, they curled up, and they just, it's obvious that something attacked them. But it isn't an insect. I've looked, and there's no insect there. And
did they turn brown along with this, or did it just seem to curl?
They just kind of, they never really stilled out, I guess is a better way of putting it.
Hmm. I guess the one thing I'd think about a little bit is that they are, I don't know if anybody's doing any lawn care or anything in the area, they are susceptible to 2,4-D injury that sometimes will cause the leaves not to expand properly or will cause them to curl, and that will slow them down. Eventually they grow out of it, but it will slow them down, and because it slows down flower set and fruit set, and I don't know if that's, it'd be one of those things I'd have to see it.
Okay.
To give you a better idea. So you may want to bring it into the extension office or,
okay,
you know,
well, here's
let's take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. I'm standing looking at my neighbor's field. It's a farm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And around the middle of June, he came through and sprayed the field. And it was obvious that it was probably some sort of a herbicide because it knocked the weeds that were down. And then he put beans in. But
mm-hmm.
I wondered if there might not have been a little overspray.
Well, sometimes unfortunately, sometimes there is some drift issues.
Yeah, that's right, exactly.
Right, and that would certainly do it. It slows them down. It causes some distortion of the leaves, and it just slows them down. They grow out of it, but it just sort of, and it kind of sounds like that's what's going on. But again, I'd have to really kind of see the leaves and get you a better idea. But eventually they will grow out of it. I guess that's the good news. But.
Right, and that's exactly what's happening now. It also affected the redbud.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The red buds are very susceptible to the broadleaf weed type killers. They're very susceptible to. I mean, I think you can walk by with a bottle and they'll. You know, they're about like grapes are the same way. Boy, you just walk by with a bottle. Tomatoes are kind of the same way, too, and that whole solanaceous.
Okay.
So.
And I've got one other question. And crabgrass.
Mm-hmm.
What's, without getting involved with a lot of fertilizer, the crabgrass mm-hmm. preventer, is there a control for something like that?
This is crabgrass in your lawn or?
It's in the lawn, right?
Yeah. The one thing with crabgrass is that, you know, it's an annual grass, comes back every year from seed, but it needs a place to germinate. So the biggest thing with any of those annual grasses is to get something good in there, and then there's no place for it to come up. There's no, it needs the sun, needs the light and stuff for it to come up. So I think this is actually an excellent time to be thinking about, you know, I don't know, usually it appears like right next to the sidewalk or the driveway or something where the grass isn't growing very well.
Yeah.
And so you get all this crabgrass coming up. So if you could figure out, you know, what you can do in those areas to get good grass growing, as in whether this is a great time to seed, so you might go ahead and seed it in those areas, or maybe you need to think about a hardscape, you know, actually putting rock next to the driveway or something, because they're opportunistic. They're coming in because it's an open space. So what you have to do is get rid of the open space.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next is someone in Chicago. Line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
This may give you a laugh. I was listening to a radio program the other day, and they mentioned to plant rosemary in gardens around houseplants, and the insects, they leave. That's a myth, or is that a fact?
You know, I think I probably saw the same program that you did. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they were in like South Africa or some place like that. But, you know, it's one of those things that I'm not sure, you know, those really, obviously rosemary has a lot of oils and it's very smelly and those kind of things. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know that for sure. I'm not sure I've ever seen any kind of scientific studies or anything like that. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. So it's one of those things. Rosemary is a great plant. I think if I saw the same show that you did, it's a perennial for them. Unfortunately for us, it's a tender perennial. It doesn't make it through the winter. So it's a little harder for us to do hedges of them or do them all around the house. But, you know, it might be one of those things that you try, you know, put it next to your roses or whatever and see what happens. And, you know, it might be one of those things that you just sort of try. But I don't. Other than that, I'm not sure I can tell you too much more.
Can you buy that in a supermarket, one of those plants?
Rosemary?
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually, I'm not sure about the plants themselves. Sometimes they have it. A lot of times they have them around wintertime as topiaries and stuff. But usually most garden centers are going to handle rosemary. But the big thing is it's not hardy. You can't leave it outdoors all winter and have it come back the next year. You have to bring it in as a houseplant or just repurchase it every year.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Right, good luck.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And for anybody who's tried to grow rosemary indoors,
I knew you were going to say
wintertime,
something.
It's one of those things. It seems very susceptible to drying out.
Yeah.
And indoor
air
in the wintertime is very dry. So you got to baby them. I mean, I think they are wonderful plants.
They're great plants.
To be able to have fresh rosemary to cook with is really nice.
It is great.
Too.
And it's the one plant that cats don't mess with, I've discovered.
Really?
Yeah. If you have house plants and the cats always seem to eat them and stuff, they don't. Yeah, rosemary.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, but it is tough. It's one of those you got to find the right spot that need to be a little bit cool and don't like to dry out.
Yeah.
All right. Tough.
Urbana, next. Line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions. One, I have a shady spot on my roof that has moss growing. Is there something better for the shingles and maybe better for the environment than power washing it with bleach solution?
Yeah.
Something that'll kill the moss but not make me need to have the roof redone.
Yeah, right. I think if you check with your home supply places.
On the shows we do on home maintenance that apparently
I know you're all about, you know, keeping plants alive instead.
Yeah. I'll let David take care of
this. This has come up on the shows that we do on home maintenance, and it is in some places an issue, particularly if the roof is kind of shady. Mm-hmm. And you can wash it with bleach, that you can do. But the other thing is there are some products that are zinc strips that you tuck them up underneath the shingles, and what happens is the rain that we have here is acidic enough so that it comes down, hits that strip, and it makes zinc oxide, which washes down the roof and then will kill the moss. And I think probably if you would go to one of the big home centers and explain what it is you were looking for, that or you called somebody who did roofing, they could probably help you out.
Thank you. The other question is, I have both clover and creeping Charlie in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
I was told by a lady that is a much better gardener than me that the solution is to pull it out by hand. I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that won't kill the grass that I can spray on it or use a spreader on that'll kill it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and this is full sun, I take it? You get plenty of sun in these areas for the lawn to grow well?
I guess.
You sound a little hesitant.
No, the stinky plants only grow on the sunny part.
Okay. The reason I mention that is that a lot of times Creeping Charlie grows well in the shade because the grass isn't growing very well. So sometimes it's an issue. It's just the grass that's not a good spot for the grass and it's not happy. So the Creeping Charlie sort of takes over. So you have to kind of think about the environmental conditions in those areas. I think the other thing that we know, certainly with white clover, sweet clover, is that it tends to be worse in low fertility soils. So sometimes actually increasing the fertility a little bit actually will help with the clover problems. Now, obviously, the Creeping Charlie then enjoys the high fertility as well. So you may be, you know, getting one, not getting the other. There certainly are broadleaf weed killers that you can put on that will kill the broadleaves and not kill the grass. So absolutely. And actually, the fall is still a fine time to do that. You can certainly do that. I certainly wouldn't do it when it's really hot, but certainly September, October is a fine time to do that. Or just rely, you know, it's green and, you know, it's growing and fills the spot and just, and it's fine.
Can you recommend a product without?
Well, pretty much anything that's listed, it'll say broadleaf weed killer or it'll say dandelion killer, something along those lines. So it's going to be probably some 2,4-D type product and maybe a couple of other broadleaf weed killers put in there.
2,4-D.
Yeah, those would be the kinds of things that would be in there. Certainly creeping charlie, actually both those are a little bit harder to kill. So if you truly want to get rid of them, it'd be one of those things. I'd read the label, use it according to label directions, obviously. But then it'll tell you that you can repeat it within 6 weeks or something like that. And then I would definitely think about doing a second application because those are particularly hard weeds to kill.
You're telling me.
Or just, you know, if you can't beat them, you know, just live with them, I guess. I don't know.
Your columns and your TV appearances are terrific.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate
that. No, they're very good.
Oh,
thank you so much.
All right, well, thank you. We have about 15 minutes left this morning with Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on this program once a month, and we talk about lawn and garden care. See if she can help you out. If you got a problem, call on, and we'll see what we can do. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign. Line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This is about tomatoes and squirrels.
I have a feeling this is not a happy story.
No, not at all. Last year, I ran about 50-50 with the squirrels.
Oh.
I mean, they get about 50% of my tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
Usually right after they turned orange.
Hmm.
So I couldn't stop them. I wound up just bringing in the orange ones and bringing them inside.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it's even worse. They're still mostly green on the outside. And they're, I think it's squirrels. They're chomping into them. And I've gone on the web. I've tried all sorts of suggestions. I put out coffee grounds. I've sprinkled them with cayenne pepper. The garden is all fenced, so it's not rabbits. And some of them are high enough up, it couldn't be anyway a rabbit. I don't know what to do next.
Wow, wow. How frustrating. So you tried cayenne pepper, but even like the cayenne pepper sprays or some of those things that might be a little...
Just powder that you'd use in the kitchen.
Right, right. You could actually, they make repellents for that. I think it's listed as a rabbit repellent, but also for squirrels and some of the other things. It's actually a spray. It tends to stay on a little bit better and it sort of spreads out a little bit better. I think that may be what you're getting with the powder, and that might help.
I have that too because the rabbits have been terrible.
Wow. You have quite a battle going on, don't you?
Yes. So I don't know what to do. How early? I'm trying to bring them in early as it is.
Yeah. It sounds like you may be the point. Have you actually tried feeding them somewhere else? If that would help the squirrels?
Well, we were feeding the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And the squirrels would hang around and get the seed that fell on the ground. But I thought maybe we were just attracting more squirrels that way, so we stopped feeding the birds.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very debatable, and I'm with you there that maybe it's just attracting more, but then sometimes you think, if you can sort of move them somewhere else and have them have something a little bit more attractive. It sounds like if you tried a lot of those sprays, the trouble is because it's an edible crop, we're a little bit more limited on the kinds of sprays, because there's certainly plenty of repellents out there that you could use. I'm just not sure on the labels on some of those that they're going to be labeled for edible crops, and certainly ones that are close to harvest. So I'm not sure on that.
I assume it is squirrels because it's not just on the ground. These tomatoes are caged. I've got the rebar kind of stuff, and we've got 6-foot cages on them.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if it's squirrels. Absolutely, if it's squirrels, and if you know you have some around. So other than the repellent sprays, you know, I don't know if scare devices would help you any, but you may, I know this probably isn't what you want to hear, but you may want to have to just really think about caging them completely in chicken wire or something. I don't know, maybe somebody out there has another suggestion, but I'm not sure other than just truly caging them because they can, the way they, you know, jump
usually
around.
They can climb on the cage. Okay.
Yeah, or just, you know, completely covering them with chicken wire kind of things, which I know would be a pain to try to do, but wow. I don't know. Maybe somebody out there has got a better suggestion than what I have.
It seems to be really bad this year for some reason.
Wow. I'm sorry I'm not more helpful on that one.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Oh, good luck.
Thanks. I think that if you have that kind of a problem, if you have squirrels, you got rabbits or whatever, I really think ultimately some kind of physical barrier.
Yeah, and that is.
You would literally have to build a gigantic cage, one that was big enough for you to get in there and walk around and work, but that was tight so that they couldn't get in. That's really the only way to make sure that they can't get at the plants is to make sure that they can't get at the plant.
Because I've even tried, you know, and sometimes actually using bird netting, you know, which is easy where you put it over. But unfortunately, like with the rabbits and stuff, they kind of eat right through. So depending on how, you know, some rabbits or squirrels, it might keep them out of it, which might be, you know, that'd be a quick thing. But you find out real quick, they may just chew right through it. So I don't know. That's a tough problem.
All right. Let's talk next with someone in the Savoy. Line one. Hello.
Good morning. I'm calling in regard to hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a beautiful one at Prairie Gardens, but was told it was more of a tropical variety, and so that wasn't going to, you know, winter. And so I see these beautiful hibiscus around town and, you know, out in the yards that look more like perennials. I'm wondering, can you recommend or give me the name of what that particular variety is?
Well, you may be thinking of the, I mean, they're also called hibiscus, but it's, well, there's a couple. Hibiscus are very confusing because they all have the same common name, but they're very different. And if you're seeing the really huge flowers, like dinner plate size, that's a perennial. So you would buy that like you'd buy peonies or anything else. It's a perennial, dies completely down the ground every year, comes back up, and maybe that's what you're seeing.
Yes.
And so those are hibiscus, and there's like a zillion different varieties out there on different sizes and all that kind of stuff. And some of them have really nice foliage now with kind of maroon foliage. And so those are just perennials, as in just, you know, look in the garden centers for the different types of perennials, and you'll find hibiscus.
I was afraid maybe, you know, some will say, oh, they'll make it through the winter, but then they really don't. So if I really find an honest-to-goodness perennial, it will.
Right. And they're not woody. That's the big thing. They don't form woody stems. It's a pretty thick stem, but it's not a woody stem like we get with the tropical one. And then the confusing thing, there's also Rosa Sharon, which is a type of hibiscus as well, and that's a shrub. And both of those have woody stems, as in brown woody stems. The other ones don't. And plus, the flowers are much bigger on the perennial one.
Yeah.
Literally, dinner plate size are
plate
bigger.
Size,
yeah. I will warn you a little bit that Japanese beetles love them.
Uh-huh.
So, just so you know.
When do you?
Buyer beware.
They love everything.
I know. Well, seems that way.
When would you plant this perennial hibiscus? Would I wait in the spring, or could I do that still this year?
Oh, I'd do it this year. I wouldn't wait. As I said, I wouldn't wait much later than you know, mid-September or so. I'd still try to get it in the ground so it has a chance to get a little bit established before we get cold weather. But no, I'd be looking around now. You may find them on sale. There's a bunch of them. I think Disco Bell is a series that's out there. It's a bunch of different ones, and they're nice plants. They're really fun.
Well, they're beautiful. And also peonies. Do you plant peonies in the fall?
Usually you can certainly divide them in the fall. You could plant them in the fall if you have them, or you get them as potted plants, certainly. Usually, probably most of the time, we would order them, plant them, or get them in the spring. But you certainly could do it in the fall, too. Again, I wouldn't wait too much past mid-September or so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Go
for
it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's talk next with somebody in Whiteheath, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I just returned from a trip to the coast of Maine. And I loved their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one thing that they had. It was maybe a 5-6 foot tall ornamental thistle.
Hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Well, there's several different types of ornamental thistles, so I'm not sure which one.
I would say the ball on it was probably 4 inches in diameter. It was like a giant.
Hmm.
I was just wondering, you know, should I break my heart and plant them here, or do I not have a chance?
I'd really look at the hardiness, because that would be the big thing. Because usually, you know, obviously in those kind of areas that, you know, they just don't have the extremes that we have. They have more moderate temperatures generally in those kind of areas. Well, depending on where you were. If you're next to the coast, it's probably a little bit more moderate than the other part.
What would a thistle not like I have clay?
Those guys are really pretty tough for the most part. If it was really, really wet, I think probably probably a lot of them wouldn't like that. If it stayed wet and it was a lower spot and it stayed wet. I do a little bit of research. I'm not sure exactly which one you're thinking of, because some of those guys can be a little bit weedy. So I would just really look and see what you're getting and go from there. But I'm not sure which one.
That's what surprised me about this, because it didn't look at all like any thistle I've ever seen. It was a thistle, but it was very, looked like a real good, nice hybrid.
Did they call it a thistle, or did they called it a thistle?
Giant.
Okay, because there's a bunch of things out there that kind of look thistle-like, but they're not really thistles to speak of.
Okay, but I'll give it a shot.
Sure, I would look at the hardiness and make sure that, you know, that it's at least like five or six, zone five or six, somewhere in there. And then beyond that, I think you're fine.
Thank you very much.
All right, very good, and thank you. And again, we'll talk next with someone in someone here in Tonica, line number four. Hello.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah. Yes. Hi. Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. This is I would talk about a rose bush. Mm-hmm. I had this rose bush for years, and 2 years ago I pruned it, and I haven't had any roses on it ever since. But it keeps growing, and it's got about. Besides the regular, it's got about three or four shoots that are shooting up to about 10 feet tall right now. And what can I do to have roses on this rose bush again?
Mm-hmm. So you pruned it last year?
No, the year before.
The year before. Now, last year was a horrible year for roses because we got that late cold spell. And so a lot of the roses did not do well last year. So last year is kind of a wash. Just kind of consider that one a wash. The other thing is do you think it's a shrub, or is it supposed to be a climber, or do you have any idea what it's supposed to be, or what
it
was?
I'm really not sure. It's alongside of my house, and it just grows straight, you know.
Right. Okay. Because some of them, the roses do bloom. If they're really early spring bloomers, they bloom on old wood, the wood from the year before. If they just bloom once, and they bloom fairly early, like before mid-June or so, they're blooming on the wood from the year before. So sometimes when we prune them, depending on when you prune them, sometimes you're cutting off that flowering wood, and so you don't get flowers the next year because of that.
Well, I didn't have any this year either.
Right. I get that. I'm just wondering about that's kind of it may have set up a cycle there that maybe there's some issues. But this year actually was a great year for roses. Now, the other thing I'd wondered about, those shoots that are just going crazy and getting real wild, do they seem like they're coming from the base? I wonder if you're getting the rootstock.
I think so, yes. They're not coming from a branch that's been there, you know.
Okay. So is this something that would have been a grafted rose, or do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Because sometimes those guys that are grafted, you'll get these shoots coming up from the rootstock, which is a different rose than what the top part is. And that rootstock, because it's rootstock, tends to be really vigorous. And so it sends up these huge shoots that often don't flower very well, or they flower with these little tiny pink flowers or something like that. So I wonder if you're getting these shoots coming up, and that might be an issue. So you may want to remove those. If it's growing really well, I would just hold off. 10 foot is pretty tall, unless you know it's a climber. You might cut those down, but normally, you know, we'd wait till after they bloom, then we would prune them. But I think this year, I think if it's doing pretty good, I think I'd do something about those 10 foot tall ones. Either prune them down, or if it really seems like it come from the root, you might take them off completely, clear down the ground.
Okay. Now
and then hope for next year.
I got another question. What can you spray on your yard for moles?
For moles, as far as spraying that, there are some repellents. These are their castor bean, castor oil kind of repellents that some people have said.
Bean?
Correct. And you actually can buy them, but it's castor bean.
We bought some little things that we put in the runways, you know, you can't get them all. And I figured if we spray the yard, you know, for mites or something, that I think that's what they come up for, that maybe that would help.
So you're looking at something to repel, a spray that would repel the moles?
Yes.
Okay. There is a castor bean, castor oil products. Actually, castor oil, I think, is the basic element in it or chemical in it. And you can buy those, and it's called Mold Away or something like that. And you can spray it on. It's considered a repellent. It just moves them around. Some people have said they've had pretty good luck with it. So, you know, it might be something worth trying. I'm not sure what you said you put in the runs. Was that, were those traps or?
No, they were like little beans, weren't they, Jane?
Like poison pellets or something? Or?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Usually that doesn't work very well. They really, moles, for the most part, they like earthworms and grubs and things like that. They're not much in the grain kind of bean kind of eaters. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that kind of stuff doesn't work well on them. So it doesn't surprise me if that didn't work all that terribly well for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
I'll try that then.
Okay.
See if I can get a castor oil product.
Okay. Good luck
with that.
Thank
we'll
you
see
much.
If we can get one more caller here. Toledo, this is line 3. Hello.
I had a question about water grass. I have a lot of water grass in my yard. I didn't know what to use or when to use it.
Okay. When you say water grass, trouble with water grass is a lot of people call different things water grass. So is this like a clump grass that just sort of comes up in this big bunch kind of in among the Kentucky bluegrass?
No, it's pretty well general over the whole yard, just grass. It's a wider bladed grass. It's it seems like it's always wet and hard to mow. I mean, it mows easy, but you know, it comes out clumpy and when you mow it.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to get at. Usually tall fescue is what people call water grass, but that comes up in a bunch. If it's throughout the yard, I'd wonder about something like quack grass or maybe one of the other grasses. The bad news, I guess, with those is with tall fescue or quack grass is the fact that they're perennial grasses. So they're going to come back every year just like Kentucky bluegrass. But unfortunately, we don't have a product that will select for quack grass, tall fescue, and not also kill the Kentucky blue. So
the solution is to tear your yard up and start over?
If you truly want to get rid of it, unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot of solutions other than, you know, digging it up, either, you know, killing it off with a non-selective herbicide and then reseeding or resodding. They're just really, if it's one of the perennial grasses, there isn't a whole lot of choices. If it was crabgrass, which sometimes people call water grass, then we have the pre-emergent type herbicides that we can use and we get pretty good control with those. But unfortunately, things like nimbleweed and crackgrass and tall fescue, we just don't have anything that will selectively take those out. So,
hey,
sorry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we're going to have to leave it at that with the promise that Sandy will come back next month. If you have these kind of questions, there's somebody like Sandy, all the people who work in offices of extension all around the state, so you can look and find your local person. If you're in the coverage area for WILL-TV, we have a program on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. It's called Illinois Gardener. It's a live show. Mm-hmm. They have rotating panels of people from the U of I and from garden centers. Sometimes Sandy is on that program, and it's a live show. You can call and ask questions on that. And then, of course, next month here on the show, Sandy will be back, and we'll do it again.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.